For December 7th, 2017, it's the Lilibot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 220. I'm Matt Cleave, senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, co-host of the show, senior front-end developer Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. So, Mike, hey, Drupal is known as free software, right?
It's free open source software, yeah.
So it's free as in beer, like you don't pay anything for it.
I never get that because beer is not free.
I agree. It's free as in speech, right? Like Libra free?
In maybe America?
Yeah. It's also free as in puppies, right?
Just keep on going, Matt.
Well, that's as far as I can go. But
all right.
Today we're talking about the line where that gets drawn, where free doesn't always mean free, because stuff still needs to get done. And there are some folks out there who are trying to get some really good stuff done. And
yeah, and people need to make money. You know, people...
I was waiting for you to say it.
You have to make money. So, yeah.
Of course. So we're talking about making money in the Drupal world, in contrib space, in software, using free software.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's more complicated than it seems. So today we have three guests with us.
Yeah, we've assembled a crack panel of guests.
First up, we have an agile consultant at Amazee Labs. He is part of the D8 Rules Initiative, which was an effort to fund the development of the Drupal 8 version of the Rules module. Dazjo on Drupal.org and Twitter. He's coming up on 10 years on Drupal.org, so congratulations. He's from Vienna, Austria, but he lives in Zurich, Switzerland for about 3 years now. Welcome, Josef Dabernig.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Josef.
Thanks for coming on.
Also with us today, we have an independent Drupal software architect and consultant. He's the creator of the Drupal 8 version of the WebForm module, formerly known as the YAML form. He has been thinking, blogging, and experimenting with making money in contrib. He's Jay Rockowitz on Drupal.org and jrockowitz.com on Twitter. Oh, jrockowitz.com and on Twitter. From Brooklyn in New York, it's Jacob Rockowitz. Hey.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, Jay Rockowitz is just, yeah, everywhere Jay Rockowitz. I have a unique last name, so it gives me that ability to take over that namespace.
It is a unique last name.
Yeah, there's only one or two other people. There's one other Jay Rockowitz, Julie, who I fight with in New York for email addresses, but I seem to beat her out because I took over all those spaces. So I have to forward her emails every once in a while.
Next up, we have a developer at the University of Florida specializing in WordPress, a former Drupal developer back in the D6 days. He left so he could create and monetize products, speaks at a lot of WordCamps around the world, Chris Wigman on the Twitters, and he lives in Sarasota, Florida. Welcome, Chris Wigman.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So let's kind of get into it. Let's talk about maybe the history and the challenges of funding and open source. And Jacob, you've been doing a little bit of blogging on this. Can you maybe lead us through some of your thoughts?
Well, I think as you talk about the history of open source, I think like the free software movement and open source need to be just talked about and distinguished. I'm going to just give my definitions to describe the difference between what free software is and what open source software is. Free software is software you can download for free and use, and the person who wrote it is just giving it away. But there's a caveat there that they might not give you the source code. Back in the day, you would get some program that'd be really cool and you could just use it. But they weren't giving you this, they weren't obligated to give you the source code behind it. And you were just allowed to use the software. And open source was this concept where people started to realize, well, we want people to contribute and help build the quote free software, and created this GPL where multiple people can use the software. They have the right to copy it, do whatever they want with it, but they're obligated to give back to the main. I think the obligation is always a little fuzzy to me, but they're obligated to share the code with the community and allow other people to use it. And open source, I personally hate the term open source is free. I think open source allows freedom to do what you need to with code and to alter and manipulate it, but it's not free. That's my definition. I mean, funding, I think the problem is as this stuff evolved, no one thought about funding. And we're still struggling to define what funding is for open source software.
So you were making that distinction of freedom between the gratis free and the Libra free?
Yes. And I think what's troubling is, you know, it started out as free software. Open source began as a free software movement. And that was the origins of it. People were giving away software for free and no one was paying for it. And this concept that open source is free just got stuck in people's minds. It doesn't cost anything. I mean, a lot of people just assume it's free because they can go download it, and it isn't, because someone spent time on it, money, energy. And even when they download the software, the physical fact that they have to maintain the software, it's not free.
That's the joke I was making with free as in puppies, right? I mean, you might find somebody giving away a puppy, but yeah, there's vet bills and food and time spent putting into that free puppy, right?
Yeah, and I think it's like those two concepts. You're getting the puppy, but someone also had to make the puppy. You know, like, it didn't come out of thin air. It came out of a lot of people's hard work and a lot of collaboration and people coming. You know, there's history behind every piece of open source software. Everything has some history. Rarely is it, I was sitting home on a Sunday night and wrote this piece of software, and that's what you're getting today. It's kind of amazing when you think about it. Someone sat home on a Sunday, I wrote a piece of software, and then 10 people used it, and then 10 people contributed to it, and now you're getting this massive collaboration. And in some ways, I'm starting to think of this as a cooperative.
So what is the current economic model of Drupal and open source? You know, people are not selling the open source. How do they make money off of it? How do they live? Do they do it as hobbies?
I think Dries' blog post about the SaaS loophole to open source is kind of where everything originates from, is you can provide services around open source code. And I'm keeping it very broad because it's more than software service. It's like consulting services, training services. I think that's what people have said is the model for open source, or the most proven model.
For clarity's sake, that's what Lullabot does. You know, we're a services organization. We're an agency. We work primarily in Drupal. We work with, you know, this software that's been released publicly to the community and, you know, happen to know a thing or two about it and are able to implement it for people's websites, and they pay us for it.
Yeah, and I think it's important. There are other systems. There's one, like an example where I don't think we're going to even go close to that because Drupal will never do that, is people do open source systems and then they have a closed source version. Where, yeah. And we should move on to WordPress, because WordPress doesn't have the closed source version, but they have the, by the way, Chris, you should weigh in, because it's like the paid or supported version. I have air quotes right now.
In fact, just some background, so it makes some sense. There's a plugin out there called iTheme Security. It's one of the biggest WordPress security plugins, and that's where I had done the product thing on the WordPress side. But what we wound up doing is selling, you know, there's a free version on WordPress.org. Everything on WordPress.org has to be free. But then we simply, you know, there's a difference between open source, where somebody can read the source code in PHP. I mean, that's very said, it's all kind of open source to some, versus the licensing. So we started putting pro features. So if you wanted the updates to the pro features, if you wanted the new code when we fixed bugs, if you wanted support, that's what we sold. So it was a very different, and that's a lot of what Gravity Forms and some of these others. Now, some of them try to disable things with license keys and stuff like that if you don't. But for the most part, it's what your license expired, you have what you have, if you need an update.
How does that fit into GPL? Because, I mean, through the GPL, any software that builds onto GPL also, you know, inherits that license. And through that, people can, you know, clone your repo, edit it, throw it up on GitHub or something else. Is that something that you're having to deal with, or is that just not part of the culture of WordPress?
Not really part of it. GPL, yeah, once it's out there, you can redistribute, so on and so forth. But your code that you haven't released, you know, you're still developing it as well. So what they're paying for your time to continue to support that product is really what it more amounts to than the product itself.
Okay, so people are paying for support as opposed to paying for new features and new, technology and updated code.
Correct. And in part of support, though, I mean, from a developer side of support, new features are part of that, right? A new version of, you know, in the case of Drupal, when Drupal 8 came out, if you had a paid product on that, your customers would expect something new to go along with it. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of WordPress, as WordPress REST API came out, as WP CLI became more popular, the interfaces into that, people are paying for you to support those new interfaces with new features. So that support, it's a different view of support. It's not just somebody's at the end of an email replying to somebody when there's a problem. It's supporting the product over the long term itself. It's not abandonware is what it amounts to.
I research every form builder. So WordPress, I've used three form builders and they all have slightly different models. And some of them are not support, just to be like my personal take on the user experience. Like Gravity Form was fascinating to install.
What is that? That's a WordPress form builder? Is that
It's the most popular WordPress form builder and it's like the granddaddy. It's been there a very long time. I think there are better form builders, but it deserves the status of being like the WordPress form builder. And the experience I had was, it blew my mind because I installed it and it was like, enter a license key. And I was like, okay, this stopped me. It said, enter a license key. And I was like, oh God, this is GPL. Wait a second. This is just wrong. I got to enter a license key. Okay. I'm going to go look for a patch to get rid of the license key. I'm going to go look. And I started searching to how to hack this so I didn't have to enter a license key. And I found like a Stack Overflow statement that said, oh, you can actually not enter a license key and just hit submit and it'll let you through.
Oh, nice.
and then I did that and it installs and they do prompt me to pay for a license. But the notion they have is we want people to do this. We're going to encourage them to do it, but we know they could hack the code. So let them also, if they're smart enough, hit submit. And that works. Ninja Form has the same thing, except you can go, the code is totally not copy protected at all, but you have to go to their GitHub repo to get the code and install it. And if you're on their website, they charge $50 and then they provide a package link to the code. And then finally, final one, not going too far. Formidable, I had to hack the code. Like they had a license key, could not get through it. I searched the code for the word license key and I set the value to true. And I mean, Chris, I'm kind of curious, did I violate any rule by doing that? Or that's actually perfectly acceptable because it's open source code?
It is open source code. The way the ecosystem around WordPress tends to work is, like I said, you're not paying so much for the software as it exists today. You're paying for the software as you want it to see it tomorrow. I think it's probably the best way to look at how most people look at or justify paying for WordPress plugins. In the case of Gravity Forms, since I've been at UF, we give a lot back to it. You know, I am in their private repo. It's all developed privately on GitHub. But I give them back to PRs and things like that, make sure that those work, make it into the next version. Yeah, I'm paying to make sure things like, you know, WordPress has gotten really good on backwards compatibility. And in the last few versions, saying to hell with it, whatever automatic wants and features, it doesn't matter if it breaks things from the past anymore. So a lot of things tend to break with updates. 4.8.2 of WordPress, which was all last month, broke all kinds of plugins. So I'm paying for a plugin developer to make sure that the plugin I'm using, it's fixed right away. There's a developer available. It's not a hobbyist that's, well, this weekend I might have time to fix it. No, this is something we're paying, you know, the case of Gravity Forms, I think they're 23 or 24 employees full time, all supporting Gravity Forms.
That's pretty ridiculous. The fact that you have one plugins with 20 odd employees, you know, I mean, typically you might have, you know, in the Drupal space, you have a large, I don't know, module, like, you know, display suite comes to mind or something like that, or rules, which Yosef is involved with. It's supported by maybe one, two, three, or four people. And it's tough to make money on that, if at all.
Well, those 24 people are marketing. A good friend of mine is an evangelist for Gravity Forms. It does nothing but documentation and evangelism for them. Other plugins, such as WP Rocket, which is a major caching plugin, has, I don't even know how many people they have. A lot of them are email at the end of the email to help people as they get moving. You know, WordPress definitely caters to the set it up in 5 minute crowd, which is a fallacy, to say the least, in most cases. So a lot of these plugins wind up supporting it that way too. But you're not paying for the software itself. You're paying for the people around the software. It's really more the ethos on it.
I hear what you're saying, but insert your license key doesn't seem to agree with that.
There's always exceptions. There's companies, you know, the plugin I was in, the day I left, they took me off as a contributor to the plugin everywhere. They completely eliminated my name, which frankly to this day pisses me off because that is completely against GPL. There are companies that give it lip service and nothing more. And that's a problem. However, there's a good amount of them that really do a pretty good job with that. I'm trying to think of Caldera Forms is another one, speaking on the form level, where he has license key for some features, because some of them, frankly, just use SAS. There's some SAS features built into it. And there's connections to other services and things like that. But the vast majority of the plugins are still trying to, the justification for charging and the ethos they try to live by is you're paying for us to be here to keep supporting this, not necessarily for the code that's already out there.
So can I do a pop quiz? Because it's really a funny number. And it's just because I'm looking online. In 2015, I found the revenue statistics for WordPress. How much money do you think Gravity Forms made in this? By the way, this is an estimate from the web, so it could be inaccurate. But how much money do you think Gravity Forms made in 2015? Think about Gravity Forms as the equivalent of web forms in WordPress. Like, and there's 10 other, by the way, there's 10 other competing products. But the revenue that they made based on, basically, they're calculating the number of downloads of and how many people paid for it.
Okay, so let me try to answer this here, because I'm not looking at any answer, so I'm just going to kind of do the math. So WordPress controls, I don't know, 25% of the internet. So let's say they have, I don't know, maybe 500,000 customers. 500,000 customers, if they charge on a yearly basis, I don't know, $10 a month or something like that.
Yeah, $50 a year, I think, would be
enough. $50 a year? Holy crap.
A year.
All right. So you have 500,000 customers at $50 a year. That's $25 million.
They're not there yet. But keep in mind, probably most of those people aren't, but $5 million a year in revenue.
That's pretty ridiculous.
They have 26 developers because they have $5 million a year in revenue. And this is 2015.
I've heard that number specifically at a couple of places from people I would trust as well.
Yeah.
The one I did was, you know, the security plugin. That company is well over $1 million a year. And I've been told by people inside there that that plugin's over 60% of that revenue.
So the agreement is support. And I feel like I call it a gentleman's agreement because the people, I think like in the WordPress community, less than 10%, I would go with 5% really understand the GPL.
Okay.
The other 95% just are told to pay and they pay. I mean, I'm simplifying it, but there's just an agreement in the community that you're not going to be like, no one opened up gravityformfree.com and started giving away Gravity Form.
Those happen all the time.
And do they get shut down?
They don't get shut down in the code. They get shut down for infringing on other info, using the name, using trademark names, using trademark logos, things like that. That's what gets those sites shut down. They do not get shut down for using the code. The code is perfectly legal. It's when they start to use anything else that's trademarked or anything else that's a problem.
Wow, that's a pretty.
I think also that's where for me it gets like interesting when I compare the WordPress modules against the Drupal modules. I think in Drupal we always had like a mindset where we wanted to collaborate as much as possible on let's say generic solutions, and it's usually not the case that we have individual companies heavily behind a module, but it's rather like a community effort. At least that's, I think, one of the big backlash reasons also against ideas like the App Store in Drupal, where the community really wanted to have modules for free without much of a business case in the modules. At the same time, agencies like us, also like Amazy, we just provide services on top of Drupal. So we sell the services around it. That's not just support, it's like building websites with those modules. But that also gets us into the tricky situation why, for example, the rules module, it has 300,000 installations and there's not one single business case behind it. So that's why it was so difficult for us as an initiative also now to get the whole funding.
We've talked about something similar like this on previous podcasts about how, I mean, kind of the differences between Drupal and WordPress. And Yosef, I think you kind of pointed that out, is a lot of Drupal solutions are these generic solutions that something like rules. So tell me about rules for somebody who only installs it because they're told by another module that they need it. What does rules actually do for you?
So the rules module was actually created by Fago or Wolfgang Ziegler, another Drupal developer from Austria that I used to work with. So I'm not the creator of the module, but I'm helping out with the initiative. And what the rules module does, it provides quite an abstract engine that's based on events, conditions, and actions. So you can react on an arbitrary event in the system, check if some conditions apply, and then perform arbitrary actions. And that's tailored for the site builders. So, you know, in Drupal, you don't have to code everything, but you can click to get a lot of stuff within the site. So a site builder, for example, when they use Drupal Commerce, they can react on a shopping cart event and they can check what the prices are within the shopping cart and then generate an email to be sent, for example. So it really empowers those site builders that have the domain knowledge to add small functionality to a website. So it's usually not a hard requirement, but it's something that is very convenient and that you, for example, also can use to let the client adapt the email texts and have them configure themselves automatic workflows on the website that can be very well integrated with a lot of other modules from the ecosystem in Drupal.
So this point-and-click interface that allows a site administrator to kind of snap together if this, then that type ideas.
Exactly. It's a if this, then that for Drupal.
So this was something that existed in Drupal 7, and then the Drupal 8 upgrade was kind of a major shift for a lot of contrib. So this was not an easy thing for you guys to do.
Yeah, the rules module was already started in Drupal 5, Workflow NG, and it was developed during studies and also as part of a distribution. The recruiter distribution was one of the first Drupal 7 distributions. So we had like a company interest as part of the company Epico to have it ready. But we also designed it as a very generic tool that can be reused in a lot of different places.
So I remember the Drupal 8 rules initiative when it was happening. One of the things that I recognized was you weren't always saying, hey, come to the issue queue and help us out. It was, hey, we've got the people who can do it, but they need to be able to have their time paid for. And, you know, you were asking for money.
Correct. Yeah. So that was a decision that we made early 2014 when I worked together with Fargo at Drunomics. We realized that the port to Drupal 8 would never happen because of limited time, because of running a company and working on client projects and not having too much dependency on the rules module ourselves. We thought about, okay, what can we do to make it happen? So we estimated like the project, how much effort would it take for the core maintainer, like the Drupal, the rules module core maintainers to upgrade the module, and we estimated 1,000 hours. And then based on the community rate, we derived from it that the companies would allow the developers to work on it without making any profit. So in Austria, the community rate would be 45 euros, where the company can pay the bills but doesn't make any profit on it. And then we asked the community to help us with that. And my job in the initiative was to kind of start a campaign. And together we laid out a roadmap, what we're going to do. And if we get the funding, we would deliver. And we got 2/3 of the money that we asked for funded. And then we also delivered those two milestones. And since then, the initiative has stalled. So we haven't delivered the last milestone, which is unfortunate. So rules is still in alpha version. And the initiative is kind of stalled until we find either a developer that has time to do it and has the knowledge. So the reason why we didn't ask people to just jump into the issue queue was because it's, from our perspective, it's really hard problems to solve. And we didn't expect anyone just to solve those problems by jumping into the issue queue. We do that a lot. We also did trainings and coachings for Drupal 8 development at different camps. And we onboarded, so we have like over 100 contributors to the rules module in Drupal 8 already. So we onboarded a lot of contributors, but it never got to that level where it would really, really drive it entirely to the end. We got a lot of great contributions, but really doing the hard work of solving the rules engine problems, that's still to be done. And we didn't, like, we basically right now we are looking for people to help us finish that.
Do you have an estimate on how much time or money it would take to kind of get, you know, that first stable release?
Yeah, so the remaining estimate is around 250 to 300 hours. But also, we also kind of, it depends on who's that person going to be. I mean,
if it was me, it would be a couple thousand hours.
Yeah, or would be the same for myself.
Yeah. So we're going to jump to a break. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about maybe solutions to this problem, how we can potentially bring more money to Drupal contributors and maybe look at different projects and how they do that.
Keeping these projects healthy is really kind of the key, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's important and it takes money to keep, it takes money.
And we'll talk about that coming up right after this. Yo.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
I've been doing some work on this right here.
You just sent me a link to Florida Drupal Camp website, huh?
Yeah, it's still on Pantheon right now. Like, it's still on a dev URL, but... Well, the website looks pretty good. Do you see it?
I do, yeah.
You see the featured speakers there?
Featured speakers?
Senior technical architect here at Lullabot, Sally Young, who has recently been made a Drupal core JavaScript maintainer.
She's been on the podcast before.
Yeah, maybe like 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
We also have Angie Byron, a web chick.
Hey, she's been on the podcast before too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, she is a former Lullabot.
That's right.
Yep. And she's also a Drupal Association board member, Acquia, and general community cat herder.
Yeah.
We haven't had Adam Bergstein on the podcast yet. We should do that at some point.
Let's write that down. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the Associate Director of Engineering at Civic Actions. And he's an awesome person. Really smart.
Yeah. So Florida Drupal Camp 2018, President's Day weekend. Come on down. It's going to be great, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's it cost for somebody to come?
Early bird tickets are only $25.
$25. That's almost free.
$25, and so Friday's trainings, free trainings. So we're going to have React training. We're probably going to have like some beginner Drupal training. We're probably going to have some advanced theming training.
That's awesome.
All that is just free.
Yeah.
And then you also get a t-shirt.
Okay.
And Saturday's sessions, at the end of it, we do a really awesome kind of a, what's the word, lightning talks. And on Sunday, we also have a couple more sessions, and we do a code sprint. Yeah, Drupal camps are they're a lot of fun. They're a lot more intimate than going to a Drupal con. You know, if you go to a Drupal con, you're going to see everyone maybe once. But if you go to a Drupal camp, you see everyone multiple times, and it gives you that more opportunities to strike up those conversations with these people. In addition to that, you know, Drupal camps are typically very regional, so you will find people in your region, hopefully, that you know that you can, you know, network with and meet and all that. The Drupal camps typically have a little bit wider variety of sessions, so you learn you can learn a lot of different things. You know, we're accepting sessions currently, and anything from JavaScript frameworks. We're even accepting sessions on like different content management systems and how they compare with Drupal, and kind of anything you really want to do. So session submissions are open, and you can go to fldrupal.camp and submit those.
Right now? Can they go now?
Maybe not right now, but probably tomorrow.
Okay.
Probably by the time they're listening to this. If they're listening to this, you know, past the weekend or so, the site will be up. Right now, the site's on the dev site.
fldrupal.camp.
That's correct, yeah. fldrupal.camp.
Cool.
And you can follow us on Twitter at fldrupalcamp.
I think we should get back to the podcast now. I think you were sitting over there and I was sitting over here, and we'll get back to that right now.
Yeah,
we now join your regularly scheduled podcast already in progress.
Welcome back. We're talking about making money in the Drupal ecosystem. So we just heard from Yosef Dabernig about the Drupal 8 Rules initiative. Jacob, how did WebForm contrast with that, or compare and contrast?
Well, I think rules is like the biggest in it. Like the migration from 7 to 8, the history behind rules that Yosef just went to sums up like what everyone kind of struggled with how estimating how long it's going to take, trying to figure out how to do it. A lot of discussion on how to do it. And in web forms, there was a similar thing. It was 1,000 hours. That's the estimate that went in the main ticket on porting from D7 to D8. There's a lot of other history behind it. But when that 1,000-hour estimate kind of came out, that ticket just died. It just stalled. And my shortest description of the history of Webform for me was I needed a solution. So I created this other module, YAML form, and there's other podcasts I'm talking about it. And I was like, I can't do 1,000 hours. I never thought I'd take over Webforms. And I just started this YAML form module and just started working on it. And somehow I got so into it. It did take 1,000 hours and it did take over the Webform space. But it was that struggle. And I did it because it was sexy. Webforms, YAML form was a sexy project. Rules is not sexy. It's an API.
Yeah. People seek out Webform. Like people like, oh, I need a Webform. Let's go get the Webform module. We need Webform. Rules, I think, is like a, oh, well, this module tells me I need rules. So I guess I'll go get rules.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I mean, Webforms for me, like I do these video screencasts of Webforms. I know when I'm talking to an HR person, I could describe my contribution to Drupal and they could see the feedback and understand the value that I add. And I mean, even while we're talking about money and open source, I mean, that was something I've gotten back in the last year from contributing to open source. It's like changed, it clearly is going to change my career. It even probably made me a little more valuable when I'm negotiating salaries. So that's an underlying thing of open source. If you do it right and you can put your name out there, which is a whole separate kind of discussion, is how do you create a name for yourself? But rules is really tricky. I've called it out. There's these API modules that the community is definitely struggling with upgrading contrib modules from D7 to D8 because the amount of work required is more than someone can do on a Sunday night. And we're still struggling with it. There's ticket, you know, it's like about bringing money. How do we fund it? How do we encourage people to do it too?
Yeah, especially with the size of these two modules, right? I mean, if it were something simple, I mean, I think a Sunday night might get her done, but Webform is not an easy task.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing with Webforms that I have kind of shown, and I've seen in other modules, right? Some amazing modules have been upgraded to Drupal 8, and the role of maintainer is clearly one of the most important factors with something getting, in open source, it's one of the most important factors. I think there's stats where 95% of the work on an open source project is done by, quote, the maintainer, the one individual. Because there's some amazing modules that no one's acknowledging did awesome jobs going to 7.8. Like Search API is stunning, what they have in 8. Yeah, IMCE just did it. And that's a developer who looks for no recognition. I don't think the person has a description on their account page. I can't even figure out who's the developer on it. But it does show this concept of like, you got to have one person who can find the time to focus. And yeah, Drupal's tricky. I mean, going back to the issue with rules, you need people who can focus and solve long-term problems. And I don't know, someone who's committed to a project will take on technical debt, which I do in Webforms all the time. I'm constantly refactoring the code base to make sure it's maintainable. It is a really tricky problem because people are doing it for free. I mean, we got to be clear. I think that the assumption on all these modules, it's been done for free.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, either there's a big business case behind it or there's just a lot of passion behind it. And if you can combine both, that's definitely driving it even better.
I mean, one combination, I don't want to say certain things are not free. And like commerce guys upgraded a lot of modules to build their commerce solution, like the address module and some other things. So they're not doing it for free, but they have another business use case to do the work.
Sure. I mean, they needed commerce to be out on Drupal 8. So yeah. They needed to be able to have all of the dependencies ready to go.
Another one I did see that got upgraded that got paid relatively funded, and still there's blog posts where they're struggling, is the Salesforce upgrade to Drupal 8. There was a specific client that, quote, needed Salesforce integration in Drupal 8, and they were willing to fund the initial kickstart of that project. But no long-term, that is a big problem in the community. I want to emphasize that one. It drives me crazy is I've seen agencies do a project. Yeah, they have a requirement. They build this module. It's great. And as soon as the project launches, they move on to the next module. And there's modules with like patches that are 2 years old that no one's ever going to commit because no one's maintaining it. And that is a whole other can of worms in the Drupal community.
It gets complicated, you know. Like one thing that I was kind of throwing around in my head is if I'm a module maintainer and I'm getting paid, I don't know, $10, $20 per year for this module, why are people going to contribute to this module? You know, in the WordPress ecosystem, you know, there's something like 140 different form builders, and within Drupal, you know, there's, I don't know, maximum 1, 2, or 3, and I think there's an advantage of having less because they become more extendable. They become more of a use case where it can work for anything. but I'm going to be a lot less likely to contribute a patch to someone that's making, I don't know, $5 million a year on their project.
I agree.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
Can I, one thing about WordPress form builders, and I'm gonna say it. Ready? WordForms is more secure than WordPress form builders by far because there's more eyeballs looking at the underlying form API that I'm using for web forms. And in WordPress, each one of those form builders has their quote own version of form API.
I was wondering about that. Yeah. Wow. So WordPress itself doesn't have anything like that.
They don't.
Correct.
Yeah, my understanding with WordPress is they don't have a form API, they don't have a render API, and a lot of the stuff is just kind of one-off.
Well, we talked about the field API missing, and that makes everything tough as far as something like views would be impossible.
So I was wondering, we talked a bit about how the Rules Initiative raised money, and we did that by crowdfunding, and we also did that by sponsoring. Jacob, and how did you do any funding for your work?
No, I'm very, very independent on this. I have the time. This is an important thing. This is another nuance in Drupal that we need to get out there, is like everyone has time to do this at certain points in their life. It's not a sustainable thing to maintain something like this, but when you're in college, I mean, I did a blog post where I was pointing out Dries was in college when he started this. He had the time, he had the initiative, and changed his life. And he contributed to open source. I happen to have a pretty stable separate income coming in from Memorial Sloan Kettering that's allowing me to put in the 20 plus hours a week into web forms. It's not a sustainable model, just to be clear. Like, I will burn out because I can't do 20 hours a week and not be paid for it for the rest of my life. I didn't do crowdfunding because I was just, it's a tricky one. I think I have mixed feelings about crowdfunding. Seems very tricky. There's been other initiatives that have worked somewhat. I'm fascinated by what's going on in Vue.js, where Evan Yu is being crowdfunded through Patreon to support Vue.js, and he quit his job and is solely doing that. So there's a case where it can work. It's hard. You're asking people to give money to an arbitrary fund that's getting used to, quote, build code, compared to WordPress, where you're saying, okay, here's money, here's support, I want the next version, I want you to answer questions.
It also begs the question about, what about core development? You know, if someone like, I don't know, you or Earl Miles is making a lot of money on contrib development, who's going to pay the core developers? And why should we pay core developers in that case?
Well, core, I think core is in a better place, to be honest. I think core, we've established that we're pushing for this notion, there's a difference. Organizations should support core. It's too difficult. You need full-time commitment. And organizations are starting to reap some benefits from supporting core. Mm-hmm. That's not to say, listen, contrib developers, including myself, at some point is going to have to get my hands into core. If I'm going to run into some form API issues, have some time and do it. But core is a slightly different. I definitely think we have to distinguish the two. Core is harder. That's a big challenge. Mm-hmm.
The core process is a lot slower, definitely. Yeah. But there's also a lot of, like, we have more than 4,000 contributors, I think, which is really, really good number. And Drupal Core has really, really improved its contribution reach over the years. And like that whole contribution recognition credit system that has been constantly evolved. I think that was a huge success for.
And just the code sprints at DrupalCon are, I think, a really big deal for that too.
Yeah, definitely.
Jacob, you're also trying other ways to make money off of WebForm, right?
I'm experimenting and pushing buttons to see what, I'm experimenting, thinking things out. And I mean, I just did a blog post yesterday. I think you guys might have seen it. It's like, I did a paid promotion as an experiment because I have a working relationship with Lingotech, who does translation services. Without totally plugging them, I think they offer a lot of value to the community and they do huge contributions back. It's very important to emphasize that this is not an organization that just paid to like have their name in Drupal. They earn their name in Drupal and they're listed. When we do the commit credits and look at those, Lingotech sponsored a lot of multilingual. So I did a paid promotion just to see how it felt. It's this idea that, I mean, WordPress has this notion like content or, you know, value, like I'm doing a promotion to see if, you know, people will click through and use Lingotech services. And I just tested that and I wanted to see how it felt. And personally, it felt wrong. I'm now for, we can't commercialize the interface of Drupal and have promotions in it. Drupal needs to rethink the whole UX when you install that software. Because if you look at WordPress, they have such a better experience when, okay.
Are you the guy who put an ad in the administrative screen of Drupal?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw a tweet on that, and I wasn't exactly sure who was responsible. I saw an angry tweet that was like, really? We're putting ads inside of Drupal administration now? Okay, just check it. Just to be clear what was going on there. Okay.
This is the most important lesson. Even when people push back, I did it to see what would happen. I always knew from the beginning you had to be able to turn it off or someone was going to fork. And every time I got pushback, when I emphasized there's a checkbox that turns it off, that was the end of the discussion. And it helps because that does open the opportunity to experiment with other ways to encourage contribution. I also have an about page now on the Web4 module that lists me as the, says, hey, this is the Web4 module. This is what it does. I maintain it. You can hire me. And then I have a separate tab to say what about Drupal and the Drupal Association, which is something I replaced that promotion to Lingotech with a join the Drupal Association promotion that will appear in the next release. Because I've also concluded that's a big thing. We need to get people to understand the concept of paying for open source, that it's not free. And paying a $15 a month, $15 a year membership due to the Drupal Association is step one. Step one is creating a Drupal.org account. Step two is joining the Drupal Association. And I'm working on that right now to just change people's mindset. That's kind of where my experiments are going.
That's really interesting for me coming from the WordPress. I was one of the first people in WordPress to put an ad in my plugin. And it was simple. 30 days after you installed it, to the person who installed the ad, it said, hey, give me a few bucks, tweet about it, something like that. Dismiss it, whatever you want to do. And that was pissed a lot of people off. But this was 7 years ago, 8 years ago. So it's interesting hearing this, which sounds like a rather recent discussion in Drupal.
Yeah.
But it also sounds to me like maybe with Drupal 8, if changes are a little less drastic between versions, there might be a little bit more open space for things to move forward on the commercial side of stuff, commercial product side.
Yeah, and supposedly the upgrade path between Drupal 8 and Drupal 9 is going to be a lot smoother going forward. But I like your idea of what you said, Jacob, about kind of installing Drupal and how that compares with WordPress. And
it kills me.
Yeah, can you go ahead and elaborate on that?
It kills me. So I use SimplyTestMe a lot because I'm starting to demo it. It kills me because so we all in this group here install Drupal using Drush. Type Drush installs. But SimplyTestMe runs you through the installer, and I keep having to stare at the installer when I'm doing demos. And it is the most boring experience and says nothing about what Drupal is to someone. And that is one of the, let's just be crystal clear. The installation process is the first experience someone new to Drupal has. Period, is that's how they understand what they're getting in Drupal, is they install it. And it doesn't say anything about the community. It doesn't talk about, contributing, maintainers, joining the Drupal Association, having an account, that this is, even talk about the open source license behind Drupal. And we're just missing opportunities. And then when you get in, you can't even see who built it. If you go to WordPress, there's a page that lists every maintainer, and it's like dozens of people with their profile picture with a link to their website, and you're giving them full credit in the software for what the work they've done.
Yeah, but Drupal is code-centric. You have maintainers.txt. What does it need to be on the user interface for?
Then the counter-argument is I hate that one. Go to the project page and take credit there. No one looks at the project page. They look at the software. That's why we're here. That's what we're looking at. The entire experience of engaging someone is in the software. It's not on Drupal. I mean, Drupal.org is incredibly important, but it's not. They came for the software. I mean, they're going to find the community, but.
Jacob, what you talked about having your own, the mention of, that you were the developer of the software as a part of the web form interface. What is the permissions to view that?
It's if you're, I think it's either you're administering web forms or you're like administer site configuration.
So not just viewing content. So somebody who's running web form doesn't automatically expose that to their end user.
Maybe not. Like that's, by the way, that's stuff I'm still trying to sort out because that could be a permission. I think the scenario I'm running into is you make a permission that's show about page, and obviously that defaults to the admin, and then people have control to default it to their other users, which they probably won't do. It's important, by the way, you have to have these things on by default. If I don't have it on, you can't have a checkbox that says turn on promotions.
Well, no, turn on ads is never going to work.
Yeah, it has to be there and you turn it off. Opt out. Ask, yeah, don't ask for permission. Ask for forgiveness after you've done it.
If the ads will be shown to end users, there's soon going to be a pull request or a patch filed or a fork to the Webform module.
I want to be so clear. I got those. I got nasty, slightly nasty comments. And every time I replied and said, if you go to administration advanced, you check this box and it's off. And it made it a non-issue because what patch are they providing? So someone's going to manually install a patch that they could go check a box. And if they knew what they were doing, they could write a drush command that turns, you know, checks the box through, you know, CLI. Everything's got to be optional. It's very important. But I think it's important to note that like 95% of the people using software or installing it in WordPress 2, that's not them. They're not going to write a patch. They're not going to install. They just want to use the software and get the benefits of the software and have it be supported.
You know, I liked that you mentioned that it would be good if the software itself would explain better. And I think the software itself, like Drupal, could also facilitate more the interaction between the maintainers and the site builders, for example, or the people that are on the website. So, for example, that we could file a suggestion for improvement to the user interface of that specific module of Drupal Core and so forth through the Drupal interface, that would be awesome.
I've experimented with that too.
you know, there's an initiative called the Out of the Box Initiative. And like right now, some of the discussion with that is, you know, developing a new theme, developing some demo content and stuff like that. But honestly, the whole installer thing that Jacob was talking about, you know, should be part of it. In my opinion, the ability to download modules and download themes and automatically install those through the UI is something that would be important for people coming into Drupal. Obviously, for enterprise production sites, that's something that you would turn off. You know, and your file system probably wouldn't allow it in general. But for a lot of people who are running Drupal on shared hosting, that's something that it's a pain in the butt to find what you need to go search, to download a zip file, assuming that you're not using Drush, to extract a zip file and then upload that to your server. And that's something that WordPress kind of has figured out. If we could integrate some type of call to action to maybe support that module maintainer through that, you know, to me, that would be a kind of a win-win situation where, you know, if you're using Drush or Drupal console, you would never see those prompts. But if you're doing it kind of the old-fashioned way where you're either downloading a zip file and or maybe installing it through some type of admin interface, that might be useful. So any thoughts on that?
I got to weigh in on that because, okay, I'm going to also give WebForm a diss and say it has a lot more bugs than Gravity Form ever did in Gravity Form's evolution because I'm one person developing. I can't see all the issues. And I've done releases that have broken sites. I want to be really clear. It's in beta. It happens. Drupal has a lot more unstable code because it's not funded and supported. So, Mike, the concept of people installing it through UI, you open that risk up. People are like, oh, I'll install rules. I mean, Joseph, people would install rules in alpha. And that's a slight thing we have to be aware
people
of.
People are doing that, even if we warn them that it's not stable yet.
Yeah.
There's
but
a lot of active installs already.
I mean, obviously, you can limit that type of thing to stable modules or beta modules or something like that, or maybe have a drop down at the top that says only show stable modules, etc.
Yeah, it's a nuance. But I think the one thing I'll just throw out there is the support. Like WordPress has this by the way, I love WordPress's ecosystem, but I want to kind of draw a line, a very personal line, because people need to hear me say this. I'm absolutely against charging for modules. I want to really be clear on that.
Why is that?
Because you guys are sort of hinting, there's this nuance. If you charge for modules, you'll create this issue. People will hold back features, which I've never done in the web form stuff. Like, I'm charging, so I've got to plan out my features, so I add value, so someone's paying. It creates a whole different ecosystem, and I'm kind of against this notion of charging. But everything else in WordPress to me seems brilliant and makes a lot of sense. As important as having videos on a project homepage, it seems crazy that we can't do that. I got in trouble because I took a screenshot of YouTube, my YouTube video, and just put the screenshot linking to YouTube. And people said, that's not right. You can't hint that there's a video and it doesn't play in Drupal on Drupal.org. And it's like, no, we need videos on Drupal.org to promote the products.
Part of this comes down to funding the DA.
Somebody once had the right filter and ended up putting one on there anyway, which made me laugh. This has been several years. But Chris, you talked about you were the first guy who put an ad in your WordPress plugin.
One of them,
Is that normal now?
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's plugins out there to control the number of admin notifications.
So it's your fault.
Yeah, you can blame me. Everybody else does.
How did that go over? And what do you think Drupal should do to bring money to contrib developers?
Well, two things I would say. One, don't be afraid of the ad or ads or anything like that. It worked great. Yes, there was pushback on it initially, but it's worked so great going forward that a lot of people are doing it. And two, these businesses are more than code. You know, I've heard comments from you guys that, well, the Drupal community is more technical. I've got a master's in CS. There's a lot of guys who are good developers on the WordPress side too, but there's a lot more people that do things other than code. Drupal's so focused on code and code alone that it seems like oftentimes the community misses the picture, which is a big part of why I stepped away from it, 5-6 years ago now, and I haven't come back to it. There's more to this stuff than code, and selling, planning out projects. And Jacob, I don't mean any offense by this, but the way you talk about project planning, when I was working on it, I had a year worth of features planned out. How do I keep developing? What have people been asking for on a project? At the time when I left it, it had 4.5 million downloads. What have people been asking for? That was a security plugin where anybody who go on The Verge or something would be like, oh, this feature looks neat. When are you going to implement it? So you start keeping a running total of what people are asking for. And some of those features take an awful lot of time. And then we had people that would work with marketing. We had a project, people that would work with project management on these plugins and things like that to kind of keep everything sold together. Because the reason I sold it is I was the sole developer, kind of like it sounds like you're doing with web forms. Yeah, that gets old fast. There's only so much you can do with one person.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm good at this. Like, I've done like one website for 18 years, so I'm able to focus, but I still am getting killed. Like, QA is killing me. I cannot emphasize. I can't physically do, how do you put it? We write the code and we need someone to test it, but the community is not, that's not a role in the community.
That's a big one with WordPress too. I brought down about 15,000 sites one release.
Yeah.
Chris, from the WordPress side, what's the perspective of just downright buying plugins? Is that a thing?
I encourage it. I encourage people that ask me what to set up. If somebody wants a form solution, I push them to Gravity Forms or Caldera Forms quite heavily.
But you were saying that's buying support. Is that buying the plugin or is that buying support?
It's both. Because if they don't have the initial code base, this is Aunt Jane wants to build her cooking blog and she wants a good contact form type thing on there. She doesn't have the existing code. Go out, buy Gravity Forms, and they're going to help you get it set up where you go wrong, things like that, through their support and this and that. After a year, most people don't wind up renewing their licenses. The blog sits there for the next 6 years. The software still works. It might have issues going, the longer it is since the last security update, obviously the more issues you're going to have. But they've got the software now, and now they've been able to set it up. And even if their blog didn't go anywhere, they've gotten what they wanted out of the thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, so there have been people who have tried to sell Drupal modules in the past. There was a site several years ago, maybe even in that Drupal 5, 6 era, that was a lot of commercial type modules. One that sticks in my mind was it gave people the ability to buy a role, which turns out is a fairly decent Google term. Because people, know what a role is and they want to be able to assign permissions to a user because if they paid the bill or not. It didn't end up going well for them. And I remember there were plenty of people who were prolific Drupal contributors who said, well, shoot, it's GPL. I'm just going to buy the module and put it on my own GitHub or, put it on Drupal.org because I can.
So can I just add in, I don't think WordPress has like this agreement, because also you're trying to get to, my experience with WordPress is it works like any other software you would buy. It just happens that underlying in the software that you're buying is the GPL, and encourages people to contribute back to the software that they might buy. Experienced developers might not buy it, but the experience is buying software. There's nothing unique about it. I'm not saying unique, but it's like, it feels the same way as I pay for PHP Storm. You go to the website, you enter them, you give them, you know, your $50, and you're good to go. And if you have a problem, they'll answer a question.
Mm-hmm.
With Drupal, the top shelf thing, people are afraid of it. The top shelf modules, by the way, that was one of them, right?
Top shelf, yeah, that was the more recent one. I was thinking MoneyScripts was the site back in the day. It's no longer around, and if you Google for it, there are a lot of pissed off people who were like, hey, I bought this, and now they're apparently gone. It's been several years now, but yeah.
And you're like, it's open source. You can do with it what you want.
Exactly. And you know, it's actually kind of interesting. I remember I had a friend on the security team who sent the creator of the website an email and said, hey, you actually have a bug. You know, I was doing an audit for a client, and you have a bug in your module, and you should get this fixed. As I remember it, they weren't very happy to hear that.
We see some of that though too with thesis theme. You guys would probably find fascinating, Jacob, if you're not familiar with the history of thesis theme. You probably heard of Genesis. Genesis is probably the single most successful WordPress product sans hosting and maybe WooCommerce. Mm-hmm. You know, that there, it's a theme framework that those guys are just, they've been going gangbusters. Last I looked, they were doing well north of 10 million a year on that, just for a theme framework. But they had a competitor at one point that was Thesis Theme. And Thesis Theme decided that it wasn't going to go GPL. It was going to close the license off and nobody could touch the code. If you were to Google Matt Mullenweg versus Thesis Theme, and Chris, I can't think of his last name anymore, was the guy who ran Thesis Theme. That was quite the battle to keep the code itself GPL. And it was quite a turning point with a lot of this stuff too, because that's when a lot of us developers, a lot of people that were building products and everything else started realizing that the code is not necessarily the product we're selling in most cases. It sounds like with Drupal, people get mad here because that support's not there later. They think they're paying for something that's going to be well supported in the future. That's not always the case.
Well, they're not. That's the problem. I just want to emphasize, people think no one's paying for support of Drupal modules per se.
Yeah.
So I think, we've been bashing Drupal a lot, but I think we should also recognize that it's still working. So there's a lot of module out there, even, for example, the rules module, even if it's not funded, it's working. And if people find bugs, they find bugs and they file it in the issue queue and they solve the bugs. And so even though if we have not solved the funding issue entirely, I think we still can say that it's working quite well. On the one hand, yes, we might have like a system where you can directly fund the maintainers with paying money. On the other side, I think in Drupal, we have a lot of agencies serving client websites. And those websites that we run on Drupal, if we run into a bug, then we fix it. I mean, it's clear that our clients will pay us to fix a bug in Drupal. And if that bug is within one of the modules, then we just fix it there. It's not the way that we pay the maintainers to fix it, but it's the way that we as agencies, we just fix it in the module. And hopefully we also publish the patch in the issue queue, and then another Drupal developer can take a look at it. And in the end, it gets into those modules. It's a process where the money is not visible, but still there's money in the background paying the developers that work on it.
Oh, 100%.
That's a very different model, too. One thing, you're very right. One thing I'll point out with WordPress and the Drupal difference is WordPress has that same ecosystem. There's companies like TenUp, HumanMade, that are rather large agencies doing extremely large projects contributing. You know, TenUp gives quite a bit back to core. Web Dev Studios is another one. TenUp is where I worked before I came back to the University of Florida. And it's kind of in a lot of ways, it's Drupal's or WordPress's answer to Lullabot and Drupal. It's a very large scale agency. One thing Drupal doesn't seem to even want to focus on at all is these end users that build this WordPress ecosystem, all these gravity forms. You know, like I said, Aunt Jane makes a recipe site. Drupal, that's not even on Drupal's radar to try to hit those types of people. And that's a very big difference when we're talking about how we're going to make this type of, you know, how you want to build that community, how you want to build that ecosystem.
That's a good point.
But Drupal's ecosystem, I'm on board with Dries's, we're building ambitious product. I don't like calling it ambitious sites. Drupal's more for enterprise, for large scale, scalable sites. And I don't think we're going to get to the WordPress ecosystem of those smaller end users, or that ship, I think that ship might have sailed. And I think that's okay. Because I agree with Joseph, like Drupal's got some amazing stuff. The collaboration and what is built, Drupal's a better platform than WordPress. I think WordPress has a better ecosystem for funding development. But personally, I've looked at the two different, you know, what's going on in even coding standards in some WordPress plugins are all over the place. If you look at most Drupal modules, everyone's following the same coding standards. It's just a more collaborative ecosystem. The funding challenge is we need to figure out how to foster that collaboration, make it work better, strengthen it, and charging for an individual module might not do it, but we have to figure out, I don't know, how to make transactions easier.
I think it's always a possibility too. I mean, it's no secret who's doing work on a module. You can always hire somebody directly, or
I've done that, and I've done it for a few things. And the problem is, it's really it's expensive in time. Meaning to negotiate that transaction, the back and forth. I have this feature. Here's the feature. It's a college, therefore I've got to fill out this stack of paperwork to do $1,000 transaction. It doesn't scale.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You can always make microtransactions for every web form submission, since you've got rights to whatever you want to put in the repo. So,
well, you can include that Bitcoin JavaScript miner.
That'll work too. Yeah,
In there.
Yeah. Oh, but just to say it with this whole transaction stuff, I do think Bitcoin or some sort of electronic exchange of money is going to be key. If we're thinking about the future of this type of transaction, it's got to be digital currency.
Just send us all a few bitcoins and we will all be happier.
Or Drupal coins.
So Drupal should have an ICO, an initial coin offering.
Of course.
Yeah, Drupal dollars.
And WordPress would just say, show me the money.
Cash.
Yeah. I honestly think like the whole digital currency thing is, making things a little bit too complicated initially. You know, there's all types of different transactions that need to be recorded with Bitcoin tomorrow.
But that's another show.
Yeah, it is. I brought it up. It's long-term thinking because we have an international community.
Yeah, that is true.
Does Drupal have something like WordPress? It has kind of an unofficial initiative called Five for the Future. Matt Mullenweg started 2 years ago, which is basically an encouragement for every WordPress company, agency, or product to give 5% of their time back to basically core development or something close to the core ecosystem. Is there anything like that in Drupal?
I don't know if there's anything official. Dries Boitart has blogged about similar things multiple times. You know, Lullabot has a lot of contributors contributing back, as do a lot of other companies. Sure. On Drupal.org, within the Drupal.org marketplace, the companies are ranked by the number of, patches and issues that they have contributed back. So there's definitely some incentive to do so.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys, for joining us. We appreciate your time and, talking about dirty capitalism and all the wonderful things around it. Joseph, do you have any final thoughts or anything that you'd like to plug about rules? Or
I'd like to thank all the sponsors and contributors to the rules module. Especially recently, we have seen a lot of great movement in the issue queue. And I'd hope that the DH Rules initiative can also get to a final release in the next year.
Thanks, Jacob. Any final thoughts?
I feel like the musical start playing as I start talking. But I think that for me, and I didn't really emphasize, I think the most important thing in the community is we need a change of mindset. We need to start thinking about the problem and thinking differently about the problem. And it doesn't have to be extreme, but open source has to rethink this whole approach. The most simple statement I would make is anyone that goes and installs open source should know who built it and that it's not free. It's just that it gives them freedom and that they need to contribute back. And we're talking about dollars and cents right now, like money. But I think the emphasis on contributing back is more than just money. It's time, filing an issue if you find a bug and not being like someone else will do it. And we need to change that message. Like it's like the mindset, changing the message that's out there in the community. And it takes time. It's going to take years to adjust it. And I have a lot of faith that Drupal can do it, but we need to start having these conversations like we just had now.
And it sounds like you would take any patch testers in the issue queue of WebForm.
Yeah, I'll take any help, of course. I enjoy it. That's part of why I love the project of working with so many people.
Awesome. Chris, any final thoughts? Did we turn you? Are you ready to come back to Drupal?
I don't know. Maybe I'll show up at a Drupal camp at some point. Actually, we've got a Drupal site at where I'm working right now that I think we're going to be switching over to WordPress before too long. And also, it's really interesting, the different focus. You know, it is the focus that allows a lot of the money to come into WordPress. And I don't mean that as a negative aspect on Drupal by any stretch. It's a very different focus on who we're trying to target. And listening to that and how that kind of plays out in web forms and in rules and all that, to me, is just fascinating. So I appreciate the opportunity to hear some of this.
Mike Herschel, it's your show, man. Any thoughts?
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Hopefully I'll see everyone at Florida Drupal Camp. It's February 16th. Chris and Jacob and Yosef come across the ocean.
It's way better than WordCamp, so...
By the way, there's more to come. You'll see. You might want to, let's see if you'll have me on after I upset people some more.